Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
This is Larry Luxner, contributing writer for Rare Disease Advisor. We're here today with Dr. Edward Nealon, Chief Medical and Scientific Officer at the National Organization for Rare Diseases, known as NORD. I'd like to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself, when you joined NORD, and how the organization benefits from having a Chief Medical and Scientific Officer on its staff.
Thank you very much, Larry. I'm a pediatrician and a medical geneticist. I worked in the laboratory on basic research in mouse and human genetics, and I've taken care of patients for roughly 20 years in pediatrics and medical genetics clinics. I still have a part-time appointment at Boston Children's Hospital, where I spent the first 18 years of my professional career as a staff physician in genetics and metabolism. I also served a term as the president of the medical staff at Boston Children's Hospital. Then, having gotten involved in a dozen rare disease clinical trials as an academic, in 2017, I chose to move into the pharmaceutical industry, and I worked for 4 years for Sanofi Genzyme as head of global medical affairs for rare neurology at Sanofi Genzyme, which was our franchise of projects related to neurogenetic diseases, rare neurogenetic diseases. The disease that I spent the most time on at Sanofi Genzyme was Pompe disease, where the company was both marketing the only approved treatment and working on a potentially better treatment. I joined NORD 8 weeks ago on May 24th, but I was approached a few months before that by NORD and their agents with the news that NORD was looking for the first time in its history to hire a chief medical and scientific officer as a purposeful investment by NORD to try to strengthen its programs in scientific and medical realms. I was very excited by the offer. I didn't know that this opportunity would become available. 15 or 16 years before that, I had been the recipient of a pilot grant for young investigators, and it helped me to initiate some of my own faculty-level research. And when I first opened a research lab, I'd also use NORD information as good, reliable sources of information to share with patients, and doing that for 20 years. So I was very warm to the offer to get involved at NORD. Right now at NORD, we are undertaking a review of our long-term strategy. The process started before I joined, but now I'm engaged in that with the other teammates at NORD. We're trying to define where do we want the rare disease space to be in 10 years, and then on a more practical level, you know, which projects should NORD invest in the next 3 years as a step in that direction.
Right.
So it's a little bit too early for me to get into specifics about that plan as we plan to finalize that and roll that out. But I'm happy to talk to you about a few of our existing projects or kind of the philosophy I would like to apply.
Well, NORD, from what I understand, is the umbrella organization for about 330 patient advocacy organizations, correct? You mentioned Pompe disease. That's something we, of course, are very interested in. Spinal muscular atrophy, Duchenne muscular dystrophy. These are, I suppose, more common rare diseases. But then some of these diseases may affect only 100 people in the world. I'm sure there's quite a variety when you talk about rare diseases. There are, what, something like 7,000 known rare diseases, of which only 5% have cures or therapies or treatments, right? Something like that.
You're absolutely right about all of those things, including the numbers, as well as the fact that NORD is a sort of unique umbrella organization of, I think it's now 330 or so member organizations. Most of the member organizations are disease specific. Now, there are some exceptions to that, and some cover, you know, a broader swath of diseases. NORD programs, for the most part, are either pilot projects or example projects that, if they relate to one disease, are hoped to ultimately smooth the pathway also for other diseases, or NORD programs tend to be broader and aim to enable the member organizations to advance their own causes. So NORD is very active, as I'm sure you know, in the policy sphere.
Yes, in Washington.
With the founders of NORD having been instrumental in the passage of the U.S. orphan drug law, which did much to accelerate rare disease drug development and continues to power a lot of the biotech sphere. And we're still working to protect that and grow that kind of program. And then there are educational programs that in part serve to educate the smaller member organizations how they can achieve their goals. But obviously, while I'm providing some advice to our education and policy departments, my principal role is in the medical and scientific programs. We have a research department staffed by about 10 persons. We have a pilot grant program that serves to encourage investigators to work in the rare disease space. As a practical matter, most of the grants are small, which is why they're targeted to be pilot or seed grants to start an investigator along the pathway. We also have a thriving program to support on a computer platform that NORD set up, natural history and registry studies, which are intended to enable NORD member organizations who participate in that program or other organizations who want to participate in that program. It's intended to help them become research ready for their disease area. What's meant by that in part is having a good enough understanding of the disease, who has it, how many people have it, what are the main features of the disease, and what could you measure in a clinical trial, so that if that's all established ahead of time, it would be easier for an entity such as a pharmaceutical company or in some cases an academic investigator to come along and work on an actual new therapy. Those are programs that are in existence, and I'm intending to help try to strengthen those and add internal scientific rigor. To the best of my knowledge, NORD's never employed a physician full-time before. I think I was selected for the role purposely because I'm both a physician and a scientist. I spent about equal times in the research sphere and in the clinic, all with a focus on rare diseases.
I do have to ask you, the timing of this is also, this coincides with the worst pandemic in history. So much focus has been given to coronavirus and the pandemic. I'm wondering if in some way does that crowd out attention on rare diseases. The nation is focused on getting over this crisis and getting people vaccinated, and yet rare diseases have struggled for years to make your voice heard because so few people may be affected by a particular disease, but on the whole, 30 million Americans have rare diseases. I'm wondering how that plays out. Do you find that rare disease is somehow being drowned out by this attention on COVID?
I think that's an astute question to ask. Certainly, members of the rare disease community are afraid that having never received very much attention, they could be forgotten in the face of the pandemic. On the other hand, of course, responding to the pandemic is necessary. Our rare disease patients and their families are themselves at risk in the pandemic. And so I don't think we regret any of the attention given to the pandemic. We do have some programs to try to support rare disease patients who've been affected by the pandemic, as well as some educational and informational programs about COVID-19, given its importance. I think one way that we're trying to look at it is that there have been certain lessons learned from the response to date to COVID-19 that we hope will be remembered and potentially applied in the future to rare diseases. So, for example, the development of vaccines and their introduction into clinical trials in less than a year from the discovery of the virus is, of course, an unprecedented pace of development. There are, as you said earlier, thousands of rare diseases where the patients are waiting for a treatment. You know, the usual status quo has been that on average, it takes close to a decade and close to $1 billion to develop a new drug. A lot of these patients are waiting for the first effective treatment for their disease.
And as far as I know, also on average, it takes 5 to 7 years to get a diagnosis.
Yes, that's also true. I think we're hoping that some of the sense of urgency and willingness to be innovative around clinical trials and so forth could possibly, having proven its worth to the world in the COVID pandemic, result in some accelerated drug development. So we'd like to look at it a necessary thing to do now that hopefully will have some positive lessons for the future.
Wonderful. You mentioned that as the first scientist / physician employed by NORD, you'd like to implement some new programs. Can you talk about some of the things you'd like to do?
Yeah, first I'd like to make sure I'm not overstating that. We've certainly had scientists and even some clinicians employed. I don't believe they've employed a physician full-time before. Yeah. And the position of chief medical and scientific officer is a new one. NORD has a medical advisory committee, and we encourage and, in fact, instruct member organizations that they should have such an advisory committee as well. But I think as NORD has grown, there was a feeling that it was time to bring a similar level of expertise, you know, into the organization so as to be, you know, kind of available at all times and embedded in things like the strategic planning that I mentioned. In terms of programs that I would like to see go forward, which I think was a part of your question, I mentioned already the seed grant program and how I've observed firsthand that it can have a positive effect on younger investigators and encourage them and enable them to start projects in the rare disease space, which is, generally speaking, underfunded compared to, you know, the more common diseases that get more attention and more funding. I'd like to grow that program. It's been in existence for at least a couple of decades, but at roughly the same level. I spoke with NORD's leadership before taking the position about would it be possible for us to expand that program. And like so many things, it depends on fundraising, but certainly got the nod that NORD would be happy to expand that program. I'd like to see that expanded.
In dollar terms, is there some specific amount or is there some way to quantify this expansion that you would like to see?
The current expenditure is about $500,000 a year. It's much smaller than NORD's patient assistance programs, which of course are very valuable in and of themselves, but it's the research that is looking forward ultimately to the development of new treatments. I'd like to see it be a couple of times larger than it is now, you know, in order to have a larger, you know, impact. Again, that may be dependent upon raising funds. Now, for the pilot grant program, most of those funds are raised by member organizations who then entrust NORD to assess applications, select the most promising applications, and handle some of the administrative part of compliantly awarding funds to a third-party institution, as Nord's been doing that for 20 years or so. But I'd like to expand that program. Also mentioned earlier, the natural history platform and the registry program. Yeah. That's been going on now for several years. Between 30 and 40 of those studies have been launched on the Nord platform. I'm coming in now, kind of inheriting the position of being in charge of the research department. I want to take stock of how effective those programs have been and what lessons we've learned. And I think it's a timely moment to do that because NORD is also working on the development of second generation registry and natural history study data platform that will incorporate additional features. So I want to make sure that we've learned all the lessons we can from the first generation programs to design the best second generation platform by which new registries will be supported. And we'll also move the older registries, you know, onto the new platform.
You know, several of the diseases that I've written about, registries don't even exist for these diseases. What about those diseases for which you don't even know? We have no clue how many people have the disease. We have no clue what the life expectancy is. We don't know what the incidence, the prevalence of those diseases are. What about those?
Some information of that sort can be developed without a registry. And in some cases, it's really not in the literature, but, you know, something like a pilot grant might get an investigator, you know, working on defining what's known from the literature. But you're right, those sorts of resources, it can only go so far. And ultimately, it does usually take one or more good natural history studies, which can be part of a registry program or sometimes, you know, standalone natural history studies to better define those things. And you need to know, as we said earlier, how many patients have a disease, who's affected by it, what are the main and most troubling features of the disease, what matters to patients, and what should be measured in a clinical trial before you could really embark on those things. And if the rare disease patient community can accomplish those goals for a particular disease, it helps to make that disease more research ready, more attractive to a pharmaceutical or biotech sponsor who's most likely statistically to be the entity that ultimately comes in and develops a treatment.
I do have a very basic question for you, and I'd like to know, why is it that in the United States, the definition of a rare disease is something that a condition that affects fewer than 200,000 people, whereas in Europe, it's more of an incidence-based statistic that defines a rare disease?
You're right that there are differences between countries and the definitions. It's a legislative decision that was made some years ago. Don't really know why it was set up that way. But of course, if it was set at 200,000 out of about 300 million, one could do the math and come to the conclusion that it's something like 1 in 15,000 people or something. I might have done my math a little bit wrong. You could, of course, convert that to an incidence, roughly speaking. And the Europeans have defined it in terms of an incidence, which is roughly comparable. So a lot of these definitions in Japan, the EU, and Europe are at roughly the same level, but they were all independently established and defined in different ways.
Do you feel that that should be updated?
I'm not sure, because in some countries that would have the impact of creating more rare diseases, and in some countries it might have the impact of creating fewer. It is by nature somewhat arbitrary. So just like in the United States, we leave certain things to be decided by individual states, it might be appropriate to allow, you know, it is the default status to have different countries making somewhat different decisions about that.
And I do understand that because of advances in research, we're discovering literally hundreds of new diseases every year. So even if therapies and treatments are developed, there's always going to be stuff that we don't know and diseases for which there are no treatments. And I'm wondering, is it possible that through gene therapy or some mechanism, there will be a way eventually to increase that percentage of rare diseases for which there are treatments?
Yeah, a very good question. It has been estimated by some people that it will take more than 1,000 years at the present rate to develop a treatment for each rare disease. And clearly that isn't acceptable. Imagine where we would be technologically in 1,000 years. We have to make progress faster than that on behalf of rare disease patients. I think there are a couple of ways that the progress can be sped up. One is to adjust to some extent the way that regulatory agencies look at rare diseases. They already handle rare diseases a little bit differently from common diseases. In the U.S., for example, there is a standard set by law where you have to have convincing evidence of the efficacy and safety of a medication that's usually been defined in the world of common diseases by having at least two randomized controlled trials. And it's very difficult to put together one randomized controlled trial for a rare disease. The regulatory agencies have recognized that. They have approved some medications after one randomized controlled trial or in a few instances with a historical control. But there's more room perhaps to innovate around the approval processes. Separately, but in a supportive way, there's probably room to innovate around clinical trial design. design. So as one example, you know that the ordinary pathways to have phase one, phase two, and phase three studies. There's some discussion of having a seamless trial where the same patients could contribute to phase one, two, three development, and you wouldn't pause at each step to write a new protocol and get new approvals and so forth. There are also approaches that allow you to have some flexibility during the course of a clinical trial. Traditionally, you define how many patients are going to be in a clinical trial and how long the trial is going to run for. And then when you get to that point, you analyze the data. That's done because if you were analyzing the data consciously, openly during the course of the study, it could influence the decisions you make. But when you have very few patients available for the clinical trial, but those patients still have individually a great need, that model doesn't work so well if you can't even enroll a trial in a timely enough fashion. There's a discussion of using Bayesian statistics, which allows you to sort of use some information from earlier events to change your assessment of the probability of later events. And with some Bayesian statistical approaches, you could start a clinical trial not knowing how many people it's going to take or when it's going to end, and in a way that doesn't allow the sponsor to be biased, probably by having a blinded third party, you know, reviewing the data. You look at your progress to date and sort of make adjustments. So you end a trial when you've accumulated enough data, not ending a trial at some arbitrarily, you know, decided upon point in time. So there's some further innovation in that sphere that could accelerate progress. Another thing that could accelerate progress is to study treatments for more than one disease in the same trial. And there are two general strategies for that. One is to look at diseases that are, let's say, in the same biochemical pathway and potentially applicable or amenable, rather, to treatment with the same agent. And instead of setting up first the most promising trial and running that for several years before you then maybe as a secondary trial, you know, look at another disease, maybe you create a so-called bucket trial from the very beginning where every kind of patient who could potentially benefit from the drug, you know, enters the trial at the beginning. You probably then have to assess, you know, each disease somewhat independently. But the evidence from one disease could be taken to support the other diseases, and having started the bucket trial all at the beginning, maybe several diseases get a treatment approved at the same time instead of what would ordinarily happen. Even if you thought a treatment could affect more than one disease, ordinarily you'd start with either the most important or the most promising, and the others would have to wait.
I want to ask you, because we're about to run out of time, but I wanted to get maybe a sense from you of if you could name four or five specific diseases that you feel the most hopeful in terms of therapies, treatments, or even cures in the next few years. Would you be willing to hazard a guess on that?
I don't think I really can or should. Potential conflicts of interest. I just came from one drug company, and now I have to try to equally represent, you know, 330 you know, member organizations with NORD. You know, I think our goal, and getting back a little bit to the philosophy I'd like to see NORD follow, and this is in our strategic planning and certainly in my mind, the biggest problem in rare disease is not having enough effective treatments, you know, although you already put your finger on another big problem, which is getting the right diagnosis in a timely fashion. Okay. So I would like to make sure in our strategic review that's underway and in our programs in the future that NORD is doing something at each stage of the process on behalf of rare disease patients and our membership organization. So I'm asking myself, what are we doing to help with diagnosis? What are we helping to do in terms of registry studies and so forth to get diseases research ready? What are we doing in terms of discussions with the FDA and other regulatory bodies to accelerate progress towards treatments? And that could lead us back to maybe just a comment on another way that you can sort of, you know, put multiple diseases together. Even diseases that don't involve the same biological pathway, if the mechanism of the mutation is the same, such as a premature stop codon that is a kind of mutation that tells the cell to stop making the protein in the middle before it has finished making the protein. You can imagine, and there's a history of several companies and academics trying this, but maybe some more potential in this area. You know, if more effective treatment for premature stop codon mutations was developed, it could potentially work for many different diseases, even though those diseases are biochemically not similar to each other, for the subset of patients who have that sort of nonsense mutation. And in the realm of gene editing, one of the newest technological areas, there's also technologies that might be able to address mutations of a specific type, regardless of what disease those mutations cause. And working to develop multiple such therapies in parallel, and when possible, test them together in a sort of platform or bucket kind of way, would be ways of speeding up that development process so it's not one disease at a time and takes 1,000 years, but moves faster. Now, I'd like to see NORD have programs along that whole path. from discovery of a disease, diagnosis of a disease, getting research ready for a rare disease, and running effective trials.
I'd like to wrap up on something very relevant to what you just said. That is, how much faith do you believe average Americans have in clinical trials or in science in general, for that matter? Given the current focus on coronavirus, a fairly significant percentage of the population simply don't believe the FDA, the CDC, or even Dr. Anthony Fauci, for that matter. And polls are showing this. What are your thoughts on that? And when it comes to rare disease, at least, what can NOR do about this?
That's a difficult question. There was certainly a time during the pandemic where it seemed like the signs of rapid progress had convinced many of the importance of science. And then it seemed to me that the issue became unnecessarily politicized in a way that might be part of what's hampering currently uptake. And that's very unfortunate. You know, there isn't really a need for that. And then you throw in misinformation. So I suppose in the current situation and in the future, you know, putting out information that people view as unbiased, because we're an independent organization,
yeah,
that is medically and scientifically accurate, I hope it overcomes some misinformation. Again, I'd like to think that while there is a mixture of good and bad in the pandemic, that the idea that a small number of companies, most built on the backbone of the biotech industry, a lot of which was fueled by rare diseases and the Orphan Drug Act, that a small number of companies could come together and in record time produce, you know, highly effective, safe vaccines. I hope, at least for those people who are, you know, well-informed and paying attention, part of the lesson is that they should have faith and support efforts in this area.
Dr. Leland, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure. Really appreciate talking to you, and best of luck on the new job.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks so much.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.